I said I was grateful when he married me. I'm grateful that I have five beautiful, wonderful children who are with me 100%. I'm grateful for the times that he did work. I'm grateful for many nice things he did for me in his life. He served in the Royal Marines for 12 years in many danger zones. He served his country and he served it well. He was a good Marine. He's not all bad. And I would like you and the people of this court to go home today with a better picture of him. But you can still grant me that divorce. The judge began to cry. His tears were falling onto his paper. And he said, Mrs. Smith, you have restored my faith in humanity. I've been a judge for 40 years, and never have I come across a woman who said, I wish you well. And I know that God is with you wherever you are. And do you know, I walked out of that court feeling 10 foot tall. Not because of what I said to the judge, but because I meant it. Because I had proved that not only was I not a victim, but that he wasn't a villain anymore in my eyes. I felt I'd made it, that my demonstration was absolutely complete. And to me, it gave me such confidence in God's power to know that he was my husband. So here we've addressed a lot of the problems that are in your community and mine today. Wife abuse, child abuse, homelessness, divorce, separation, poverty, everything that goes with it. The problem of poverty was the worst problem of all. Because my husband gave up his work so that he wouldn't have to pay any maintenance to me or the children. And the only source of income I had was what I earned from the public practice of Christian Science. And in Northern Ireland, that's very little. Because sometimes we help people who are in prison or old people, homeless people who can't pay anything. So what I earned as a practitioner was very, very little. But every night in bed, I used to say, I have worked for God today. God will pay. And I stopped looking to persons and looked to God to know that my husband was more than a millionaire. And we had such marvelous experiences in demonstrating the truth of that all the way along. Money didn't come to me blowing down from the heavens. It came every day as we needed it. It was like that hymn that says, day by day the manna fell. That's the way it came to us. At one time, my children came home from boarding school. I didn't have enough money to pay the rent. There was an electricity bill, a phone bill. I had to get the children's fares to go back to school. They all needed new clothing. They all needed a haircut, and that was four of them. Three girls and one boy to even take for haircuts. I had no money at all. And my son, who was then about almost 16, said, Mummy, our school is going to France in the summer. Could I go? And I said, no, Paul, I'm sorry. There's no way, son, you could go. I said, I am having a struggle trying to make ends meet. Now, my children were very good in that they never asked for things. And they never asked for money. And he really tried to be quiet and not talk about it. But I knew that he wanted to do this very much. And I was praying about it, to know that God was his father and his mother, and that he would supply all our needs, and if it was right, he would go. Well, the night before they were going back to school, he said, "Well, Mommy, it looks like I won't be able to go because I have to take a check to school tomorrow to pay for it if I am going." And I said, "Well, I'm sorry, Paul. There's no way I could write you that check because it would bounce." And then I said, "Why don't you call your father?" I said, "He doesn't support you or us in any way. And maybe he would do this one nice thing for you. It might give him an opportunity to do it." He very reluctantly agreed, and he went and he called his father. Well, although I was at the other end of the room, I could hear the filthy abuse that was coming down the phone. And Paul came off the phone, he was crying. He said, "Why did you ask me to do that? We knew what he would say." And I began to condemn myself for having done this. And then I thought about it, about God being his father. And I said to him, "Paul, what did I just tell you to do?" He said, "You told me to call my father and look what happened." I said, "No, I said call your father." He said, "Very funny, I don't know his number." I said, "Well, I know it. It's Isaiah 6524. He said, "And what is that?" I said, "Before they call, I will answer. And while they are yet speaking, I will hear." Just as that, my doorbell went. And I went out. It was a member of our church, a businessman. So this man was telling me that he had a business problem. And he said, "I need an answer by tomorrow. And I've been digging for it and praying for it. And I can't find peace of mind or an answer to this question." So, not telling him anything about what had just happened in my home, I said to him, "Have you called your father before you got here?" He said, "Very funny." I said, "Well, call him. It's Isaiah 6524. So he looked it up, and I said, "You know, the answer is there before the problem. Let's just sit and listen. Quietly listen." And we did that together. And all of a sudden he jumped up and he said, "I've got it." He said, "I didn't say it before. It's so simple." He said, "It's been looking at me all along." Well, he was so grateful that he said to me, "How much did he owe me?" I told him how much it was. It was only for one treatment. But he wrote me out a check, which was for more than that, a good deal more. And then on his way through the sitting room, he was talking to the children, asking them when they were going back to school. And he said, "Are you doing anything in the summer? Are you having any trips or holidays?" And Paul said, "Well, our school is going to France." And he said, "Oh, are you going?" And he said, "No, I can't go." And this man said, "Well, I've been looking for a way to help your mother or you. Could I pay for this trip to France?" And he immediately wrote out the check for the trip to France. And when Paul went back to school, he got a job in the kitchen in the afternoons, which gave him pocket money. And he had a wonderful time in France. And the other children had marvelous experiences like that too. We all had. I could write a book about them, about the many experiences. But another problem I had was loneliness. I suffered from that a great deal. And one night, and it's not too many years ago, I was having dinner with some friends, and they were all in couples. There were four couples, including the host and hostess. We had a beautiful dinner and evening together, and then the host of the party drove me home. It was a lovely moonlit evening, and the sky was just lit up with the moon that was shining on the flowers. And as I got out of the car and walked up my garden, I thought how lovely it would be to have someone just to share the moon with. To say, isn't that a lovely moon? Doesn't the garden look nice in the moonlight? And then I began to think, but I do have somebody. My maker is my husband. And suddenly I felt as if God put his arm round my shoulder and said, hey honey, your old man made that moon. And if you want it, sweetheart, it's yours. And you know, I could swear that moon winked at me. And I went into the house feeling absolutely great. I didn't feel alone. I felt my maker is my husband. And he has a wonderful sense of humor. He can make me laugh and make me smile. And he did make that moon. How many people can say their old man can make a moon? And just as that, the phone rang. The phone's always ringing at the right time. It was my hostess. She said, I know that my husband has just dropped you off. I want to thank you for coming. We had a lovely evening. But while he's out of the house, I wanted to talk to you about something. Myrtle, could you give me some help with a problem? I don't want my husband to hear. I said, what is it? She said, I'm lonely. I said, you're lonely? I just left your house. You've a lovely home, lovely husband, lovely children. How could you be lonely? She said, my husband is so caught up in his work and his business and his golf that I never see him. She said, I'm lonely. And she said, you look such a complete, contented person that I thought you're the one to help me. I told her that I would, and she came to see me next day. I talked to her about Isaiah chapter 54, that we all have to learn that our maker is our husband or our wife or our companion. We must learn that. And even though she was married, she still had to learn that. So she began to do that. After I was helping her for a week, I said to her one day, have you ever thought that maybe your husband's lonely too? She said, my husband, he hasn't time to be lonely. He's too busy a person. I said, maybe that's why he hasn't time. Maybe he's lonely. Maybe the communication between you two is not too good. And maybe that's why he's always out of the house. Think about it. Because I said, I think we should embrace your husband in this truth. So she decided to do that. A few days later, she called me very excited. She said her husband came down early for breakfast. And he said to her, do you remember how we used to pray together every morning, and we used to read the lesson sermon? Could we start doing that together again? And she was so delighted. After a few days, he said to her, do you remember when we were going out together, we used to go to a jazz club? He said, we haven't even listened to jazz for so long. Let's get out our old jazz records, and let's find out if there's still a jazz club in Belfast. They got out the records and they found a jazz club. Then he took her to dinner one night and there was a place where they could dance. And he said to her, I can't believe what's happening to us. It's like falling in love all over again. And she said, well, I have a confession to make. I've been to a Christian Science practitioner. He said, I want you to take me to see her. And they brought me a big arm full of flowers. And they said, you know, you've saved our marriage. So it showed me to be in the practice was the right thing for me to be doing. That's where my strength lay in all those years. And I think that's what Jesus knew, that that's where his strength lay, in being in the practice. He was the best practitioner this world has ever known. And during his first 3 years of ministry, and believe me, he understood people's problems. He knew about homelessness, and he must have known about loneliness. He was never married, he didn't have a family or children, he didn't have a home of his own. He didn't have a house of his own. He never went to college. Yet, he met the people of his community where they were. He healed all the known diseases in his time. He comforted many, many people. He overcame the law of gravity when he walked in the waves. He overcame the law of the forces whenever he stilled the storm.